All right, Gary, what are we playing this week?
Well, Cole, as you know, I recently went in the woods and also became an animorph, similar to our premium episode that happened soon. We're both animorphs now.
So this is something that everybody has context for. I'm not an animorph. I just happen to have a gun that can demorph people.
I have an ability to morph. Mm. So even if they don't have the context for the podcast, they know about animorphs.
Oh, true.
Souvenation. I'm an animorph.
Okay.
I recently managed to grab some DNA from one of my all-time favorite monsters.
Ooh.
And if you'll hold on a second.
Oh, that was so painful. What's going on? So many eyes. No. Ow. No. I was going to ask how you're making that noise, but it's obviously the eyes popping out. Gary, what have you become? Ow.
I'm a beholder now. So
is Derek going to be pleased with this? I mean, I realize he's looking down at us from the stars, but
I thought Derek was out, but I hope I try to be try to do things I think he would like.
Okay, yeah,
I try to make him proud. He sent me a YouTube of Cats in the Cradle once, and it made me cry. I was already pretty drunk, but am I the dad in this? Are you the dad? I don't really understand. But regardless of which, this is melancholy as fuck.
Man, he just sent me an envelope full of honey.
That's in his culture, that means you're married.
Oh no.
But anyway, so I got these eye stocks now.
Okay.
And I figured to randomize our game here.
It's weird. You're not entirely an orb. It's just your head that is beholdered.
Yeah, I've got a beholder for a head and just a human body down here.
Okay.
It's pretty livable, actually. Huh. I wear a sack when I make love now. What's that writhing sack, you sexy young gentleman? Let me take off my writhing sack.
Okay.
And I'm going to shoot you with one of my eye orbs.
Oh no.
You'll never know which one. No, these are good ones. The beholder, you know, because of fifth edition rules, the kind of beholder they are reflects their personality. And, and since I like you, only good things can happen.
Okay.
So I'm going to zap you here with one of my eyes. Cole, do you want to check the breast pocket on your handsome blazer?
Yes. Thank you for noticing. It's a Game Boy Advance cart.
Mm-hmm.
It's a Eye of the Beholder.
Eye of me.
It's such a dumb thing to say.
It is most of this whole skull case is taken up by eye.
Mm, okay.
So it has made my brain. It's like roughly the size of like a McDouble.
It's pushed it down into your neck.
Yeah, it's down here now. Don't nobody punch my neck.
Hey Gary, what's your name?
I am Gary Butterfield.
Yep, I'm Cole Ross.
And this is Agile Suffering, the show where we play bad games so you don't have to.
Yeah, this time it's a good game.
This is a good game, even though this is it's an interesting
case study. Some decisions were made.
Yeah. This was dictated.
Yes, this is dictated by I was gonna say friend of the network, but like contributor to the network, Jala,
and friend of
us.
Person.
Yeah,
yeah, friend of like on network. Friend of the network, friend of us,
yeah, just like all around great person, Jala, who suggested it. And I saw it, and I kind of looked askance at it. I was like, do I do her second choice? No, I don't want to do that. Like that's a weird reason to do that. And so let me just read what she wrote in here. I played this game on Sega CD and absolutely loved it. So when I found out that it was ported to GPA, I was thrilled and bought it immediately. The horror. It's playable, but extremely boring. The graphics, the lack of any interesting sound design, nothing to recommend it. I think it was probably the first instance where I played a game that I had zero interest in, just on principle of having paid someone actual hard-earned money for it. Oh, play the Sega CD version sometime, though. It's neato. And she's referring to one of the several ports of just the regular-ass PC Eye of the Beholder game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eye of the Beholder, a classic.
Yeah.
So Eye of the Beholder, early, I think the original version pre Gold Box.
Yeah.
D&D Dungeon Crawler from SSRI.
It doesn't have the same like combat as the Gold Box stuff.
Even though the version we played did, which is the weird part of it. So like Eye of the Beholder is a classic dungeon crawler. It deals with the city of Waterdeep and Xanathar, the Beholder crime boss. which I found when I found that out, like I was just like, you know, because I played this when I was younger. I never played the GBA port, which we'll talk about the differences here in a second. But it was like, oh, Xanathar, that sounds cool. And then like in the new Volo's guide, they talk about Xanathar. And I did some deep diving on Xanathar. And I'm like, oh, he runs the Thieves Guild? That's weird and cool.
I like that a lot. I love the idea of him like being dressed up like an old timey gangster, like having the fedora and then just like a zoot suit just like hanging limply below his head orb.
He's got a Tommy gun beam that shoots out of one of his eyes.
His Tommy gun beam sounds a little bit more biological.
It's like Isaac crying. It's like when you get soy milk in Binding of Isaac. So it's just a first person dungeon crawler that is, you know. Yeah. It's D&D rules, it's in real time. So you tap to attack and or not tap, but you kind of move through your characters very quickly, similar to Warriors of the Eternal Sun.
Yeah.
And pretty light on story, but there's some story. There's some cool touches to the original version.
There are like little events that pop up when you're kind of going through little dungeon-y choices kind of things.
Well, my favorite one of those is that you start out with four characters that you make. But the way you get, you can get up to six party members and you find ones and resurrect them.
Yeah.
So like you find people's bones and then resurrect them and be like, you're my buddy now.
Like, you owe me.
That's a whole element of like resurrection that I've never even thought of. You know, like if once I die, like if there was resurrection, anybody could do it. You'd assume it's going to be your friends, but someone could just come across your corpse and be like, I wonder what's in this Christmas cracker.
Yeah.
And like open you up, you know.
You're mine now.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, strange. It's just a more thoughtful form of necromancy.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah. Like, you know, like you owe me big. It's like social pressure necromancy.
Like, it's passive aggressive necromancy.
Yeah.
I was thinking it'd be nice if you could.
Yeah. Could you I need a ride to the airport. Well, I did resurrect you.
Yeah. No, that's fine. We'll hit you back later.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll run us through the drive-thru on the way. Yeah. We'll get some White Castles.
But yeah, like that is the basis of what we're working off of here. That's a classic D&D game. Like, I haven't played very much of it. I've played enough to know a little bit what I'm talking about, because like that is really influential, and I'm down for that kind of first-person dungeon crawl.
Yeah, it's good. The mazes get aggressive in an old school way that's not very good.
Yeah.
So like it's very mazy, which I don't mind. But the early versions didn't have an auto map, and there are like teleporter traps and traps that just make you face a different direction. Which like that's excruciating. Teleporter traps are never okay.
Yeah. Especially ones that are just meant to fuck with you based on the fact that every hallway and every direction looks the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So that sucks. But other than that, pretty neat. The port that Jala was talking about, the Sega CD port, is the same, except it has a soundtrack by a very influential Sega composer, mm-hmm. whose name is escaping me, that is like a drum and bass techno soundtrack.
Hmm.
That's actually kind of good, but doesn't fit very well. But that's the only difference between that version and then like the Super Nintendo version, which is pretty much a straight port as well, which is the one I played a lot when I was young. The GBA version is a different beast, though. Like it's not really a port.
No, it's like an adaptation. But there are parts of it like you could be mistaken, or you know, mm-hmm. you could be forgiven for mistaking them, because like the actual exploration, like you are still walking around and doing this first person kind of dungeoneering stuff.
Mm-hmm. Except for when you get into battles, it turns into Gold Box.
Yep.
Battles. Which like there's a huge dearth of Western RPGs on portable systems or on iOS or anything.
Yeah.
Like it just doesn't happen very often. And this is, again, I feel like this is probably like, if I had enough time, mm-hmm. this is the same problem. Go back to the last episode where I talked about, you know, the encounters going too slow.
Yeah.
But I bet you this is not bad.
No, I enjoyed playing what I played. It's, you know, like it is kind of in my wheelhouse for that kind of turn-based tactical stuff.
Well, and it's third edition. and there are non-combat skills that were not in the original version.
Yes.
So you can play this, you get like diplomacy and intimidate and stuff that come up in social situations. There are more like story beats and kind of choices and things like that. Like,
yeah,
it's really weirdly, like, really ambitious for a Game Boy Advance game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was kind of shocked when I was, maneuvering my guys around and there was just a straight up attack of opportunity. Like, that is a thing that you have to consider. I was like, oh shit.
Yeah. Like that's good.
Yeah.
That is good. The problem is that gold box thing. Like, so that when you're playing a gold box game, the battle system is very similar to this, except with, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons rules. Because you're always in wide open areas.
Mm-hmm.
So things like area effects and maneuvering are a little easier. Here you spend a lot of time in hallways.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means your guys in the back are going to be, you really need to spec those guys for ranged weapons or they're going to be pretty useless.
Yeah.
That was like the biggest bummer that I dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. So you're in hallways and also these hallways are no more than two dudes wide.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also like problems with the level of zoom. You're pretty close. Pretty close in the camera is so like that wouldn't be a problem if you were not kind of always getting into situations where you're fighting more people than you realize you're fighting.
Yeah So that is the bummer part of it, but like other than that kind of slow clunkiness, like kind of into it.
Yeah,
like you know you make D&D characters, you roll them up, all that shit, like it's got that. It's kind of fun. Yep. Advancing magic, all these things I appreciate.
Yeah. It looks nice. Like the actual gold box combat is a little bit goofy looking, like the characters are really kind of like gawky and awkward, which is not that great. The cinematics and also just like the characters, you know, in the world when you're doing the first person stuff look very good. Like, this is a very well put together thing. You're not like dealing with the action happening in a little window. That would be intolerable on the Game Boy. Like,
yeah,
it's full screen and like you have overlays for your menus. You're kind of fighting up against the lack of inputs for dealing with a bunch of this. But it's simple enough that that's not really that huge of a concern. And you're not doing the real time stuff. Like, there's plenty to recommend this.
Yeah. Yeah. The actual monster portraits are kind of great.
Yeah.
Like, they look really good, and the human portraits are very good as well. Like, they look like they're similar quality to the like Final Fantasy Tactics Advance drawings, level of detail and stuff. It is just weird. I would not have expected this to be good. Like, the death knell of it is that it goes so slow. Like, these fights take longer than they take in actual Eye of the Beholder, when which they go by very quickly because it's in real time.
Yeah.
So that's the bummer part of it. But it's like this is such an ambitious. Like, probably ultimately a failure. Like, I'm not going to rush out and play more of this.
Right.
But
right.
Such an ambitious game. Mm-hmm. That's one of the joys of like network stuff is to find, these kind of things you would not have really considered.
Yeah. I mean, and like, there was definitely a time when I was in high school, like when I was, fresh off of Final Fantasy Tactics Advance and like thirsty for more. Let me try that again. Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. I just kind of all the way through that. Yeah. And I was thirsty for more, where like, if I would have given this a second look or even knew that it existed, I would probably have a lot of history with this.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, I think I own this. I think I bought it from a PRGE at one point because it's like, it shows up for like $2 all the time. Like, it is kind of considered like trashware, and it's just hard to get into, like, but not, I don't think it's bad once you get into it.
Yeah.
There's such a, like, I was talking, on Twitter, the perennial Western versus Eastern RPG.
No, of course.
Like, conversation thing came up.
Yeah. Probably and inflamed by Final Fantasy 15 coming out recently.
Not actually, but like it could very well could have.
Yeah.
But the thing that came up where it's like, these old games, like, so if you look at old console JRPGs, like the issue with those, like, I think the thing that like makes them, they're like charming and like some of them are very good games, but I find them very boring now. And part of it is just like, there's just not enough going on. There's such like it's so far the other direction when you play like a gold box game or something like that, where it's like initially very off-putting, but there is a real like urge. It's like, oh man, no one could ever understand that, like that is too fiddly to understand. And like, I think that's what's behind the reputation of this game, where it's like, how could you ever get this? Like, no, I mean, maybe it takes you like a half hour to get used to it.
Yeah.
But what you're getting then in exchange is like, as I get older, that in the Retronauts on Dragon Quest, where they talked about the guy who made the original Dragon Quest, whose name escapes me, how he's like, I set out to make a game like anybody could beat, because it would, you know, if you just kind of grind enough, you'll be able to beat it. It's like climbing a mountain. I hate that game philosophy, like that design philosophy. I think that's very harmful.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't want to like not have anything tested.
Yeah.
When I play a game, you know, just test my patience, just test, you know. And when I was younger, when I got into JRPGs, and like would, you know, they were, I'd play any of them. Mm-hmm. I think that what I thought was like, oh, this is a game that is testing my cleverness.
Yeah.
You know, it's not my reflexes. It's what, but it wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, like in real life, that was adventure games where there are actually puzzles,
yeah,
or like something like Castlevania where you have to consider approaches and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Final Fantasy 1 does not test your cleverness.
No.
You know, Dragon Quest 1 does not test your cleverness. Like, and this feels like it's enough on the other side of that spectrum to like, you know, to have a little bit of meat to it, to where I think it kind of does. Like, you have to, you know, you are making considerations when you're building your party that are important. You are, you know, individual battles can have a lot of consequence, and positioning matters, things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, it is actually a test of skill in a way.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I think consequence is the operative word for that, where you can't you can probably just kind of flub your way through one of these fights, but you're going to come out the other side with fewer resources, and you're going to be set up for less success later on. Where I think both of the success case for both of these is, you know, no matter what that consequence is, like, patience will prevail. Like, patience is a virtue in playing games. We've talked about that. But like, your skill actually helps you get around that. I'm thinking specifically like there are Final Fantasy games, you know, like Final Fantasy X or something like that, or even 12, where it can be a tax on patience, but it is testing to see if you've learned the system enough to like work around it. You know, to know how to set up the machine to where you can get through. And that's the level that the game is, you know, working at. You
for
know?
Sure.
And that's the case for both. I think that like the best WRPGs that I've played have done that exact same thing too.
The comparison I'm making is specifically of like of a vintage.
Yeah.
Like I'm comparing specifically Dragon Quest 1 to like a Gold Box game.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, or something like that. Like I actually like the Dragon Quest series. Like if the game had kept with that kind of philosophy of you can never die.
Yeah.
You know, like you just lose your money, so you're just set back in your patience.
Yeah.
You know, if they had kept with that philosophy of, well, we just want everyone to be able to do this if they have patience, like I wouldn't like the series.
Yeah.
I do like the series because it got more complicated, it got more nuanced and rewarded, you know, thought as a way to get kind of around these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but there's a accessibility is real. Like it's a real thing. It is something that I have it's not something I value as much as I feel like a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not trying to say that to like brag. It's not a weird brag. It's just kind of like, I will put in my half hour to understand something if that means a better experience in the long run.
Yeah.
You know, that first half hour is not the most important thing to me.
Right. Yep. And we ran into that a lot on the show too, where it's like, what was that Bethesda game that we played? Or not the Bethesda one, like the crazy first person open world RPG. On this show.
Yeah. It wasn't Seventh Dragon. It was, and it was like Anarnox or something. Like had like a Arcana. Yeah. It wasn't Arcana. I know what you're talking about though.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like that one. It's like, oh, like this isn't bad. This is just way more than I can, than I can be bothered to look into at the moment.
For like this like, show.
Yeah. Yeah. For like for this show, it's like a read the manual thing, you know?
Yeah. And in its time, you know, some of those games get shit on in a way that like is very so like I read some reviews of this game when it came out, and it's like, oh, this is going to have a hard time holding anyone's attention when compared to, you know, and then talked about like contemporary RPGs like Golden Sun and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think Golden Sun 1 is pretty execrable. Like, I think that game is pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know, and like there's some neat things about it, but it's like so talky and slow. And so simple, you know, like eventually you get some puzzles and everything, but initially like it has a worse, you know, it's very easy to get into because you're just tapping A to get through it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just kind of like I don't know. It's a gamer thing of like presentation being weighted in a way.
Yeah.
That is hard for me to get into.
Yeah.
Hard for me to really get behind.
Mm-hmm.
So anywho. That's my thing. Yeah. And it just makes me, it's, and I'm not like calling out Jala for not liking this either. Like,
no,
there are definitely times where like, I'm not going to keep playing it. I just feel like of its time, like probably could have been pretty into this. Well,
there was also, I think that what she ran into was she got this expecting something else, you know,
totally.
If this is an adaptation of the original Eye of the Beholder, even the one that she played, it's a pretty shitty one. Like they made it into a different thing, like a much, you know, a much slower, more methodical, more stripped back thing. Than what was available specifically on consoles before. And I could see somebody coming from the SNES version who would have a very similar kind of opinion, you know?
Well, 100%.
Yeah.
You know, because the SNES version is pretty much just a straight port.
Yeah.
Have you looked at the covers of the original versions of these at all?
No.
Like the PC versions, they're great. That one with the two, you like pointed out to me, they were next to us at PRGE. You're like, look at that box over there.
Oh, yeah.
In that booth. That was Eye of the Beholder 3, I think. And like that cover is so good. A lot of good skeletons on these things. Yes. Not very many beholders. Like tons of skeletons.
So a little bit of context for that story. When we set up at the Portland Retro Games Expo, there was this booth next to us that was solid. Like, we were over in the vendor section because we sprung for a bigger booth. And on the side that was facing our booth, they just kept on putting out this series of like more and more Gary-ass like boxes
only facing us too. The other side of it was all like PS2 games that right. You know, I had no interest in playing. Yeah,
but like it was everything in the D&D font that had like a Kingdom of Skeletons, like, okay.
Yeah, Assault on Mythdranor. I'm looking at the cover that they put out right now, which is 3, which is not supposed to be a very good game,
right?
Which is like two skeleton, like a skeleton king and a skeleton like, you know, a priestess or something standing in front of a big giant fireball covered in cool jewels and
I'm
stuff
like that too.
Yeah, real nice looking. But they just kind of kept putting out facing me. Eventually I bought the like D&D thing that they put out, the board game
one. Yeah.
Yeah. Like immediately I was like, cool, I know we just set up and we don't take our breaks yet, but I'm gonna go buy that because I can't concentrate until I get it.
I was like, so, I understand, man.
Yeah, it, you know, guy, it's like how you rub one out before a date, like.
Yeah, you get the easy one out the chamber.
I get rid of that hairpin.
the SNES cover is great though. Holy shit,
that's really good too.
Yeah,
this is very good art.
Yeah, it's a wizard in the background casting a spell at a beholder in the foreground, and this is a very meaty beholder.
Yeah. I never thought about that, but like you could probably do you think people ever like ate beholders? And you're back in Dungeons and Dragons times.
I mean, like a beholder is a Walmart. I was about to say on wheels, but you know, on that floats, like they're used a lot for reagents. I don't know about like cuisine.
Yeah, that's. I mean, specifically, I'm like, could you like carve off a shank?
Are there okay? So here's the thing: you look at a beholder, you think, hey, that's a lot of eye. I can't imagine eating an eye outside of like some kind of weird like Temple of Doom style scene.
People do it, though.
Do they?
Yeah, I think there are delicacies of like eating eyes.
Yeah,
as a thing, I think I would have a real hard time with it too. Like it'd probably be like pop like a giant roe.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's the pressurized system. But like,
yeah,
you know, if somebody, I have to imagine one of those dogs would just be like eating a turkey neck or something like that. Like people do that, you know.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Well, and even just on the like this one that's on the cover of the Game Boy version, its main eye is pretty small. Mm. There's like going to be some like cheek meat and stuff.
Yeah.
No, like, that,
no, you're going to take some of that cheek meat and you're going to fry it up like it's spam.
Yeah.
No,
I imagine that, like I wonder if that's good or if it just tastes like poisonous because they're evil creatures or what.
Right. Well, you get back into that problem of like, do you eat somebody who's like really hateful and mean? Because
yeah, do they taste different? Like we talked about that a lot. Like if you just served up a platter of people, like could you tell which one was a bad person?
Which one of these meats gave the most to charity?
Yeah, I mean, you can, again, you kind of like, I think we landed at a good place on that where it's like, you probably can't tell because, you know, being evil is stressful and that's probably going to make your meat gamey and bad.
Yeah. So between the SNES one and the Game Boy Advance one, we're kind of seeing this evolution, right? Like, oh, my real beholders look like this. You know, like real beholders have curves because like this Game Boy Advance one, it's of the more skeletal and crustacean like.
It's a third edition.
Yeah.
Right there. Yeah. Because they got less orby as it went on. Like the ones with the big jaw. That's a real third edition.
I think. I have a bunch of Orby's coupons that are about to expire.
Like Orby sauce. Yeah. Did you I got that Volo's guide. That's the new D&D monster manual that's like almost all ecology. Does anyone spoiled for you yet how beholders reproduce?
No, I haven't read that far into it, and I understand that's ridiculous because that's like the first chapter.
It's going slow for me too. I've been savoring it.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I tell you the one line part of it?
No, I imagine it's some kind of spore, maybe.
They accidentally dream up other beholders, and because they're so powerful, their dreams come true sometimes. So in their hateful, like rage-filled nightmares, they dream up like enemies. They make up evil beholders or exact copies of themselves that then become reality. So they wake up. There's another beholder there that they dreamed, and then they usually try to subjugate them immediately, but sometimes they go on their, they escape or something. And that's how we get new beholders.
Oh, that's pretty great.
They also, sometimes they think of 10 perfect clones of themselves that are smaller, and they become like a clutch or like a coven. Can you imagine, Cole, like you wake up, you have a dream where you think of 10, like 3-foot-tall Coles. You guys all wake up in bed together, and that's just you now. Like, is Cole surrounded by 10 little Coles, like going about your business like a curvy mass attack? Like,
I mean, can I train them to edit the shows?
Probably.
Like, they're not little idiots. Like, they're just me.
No. Yeah, they're just smaller.
Fuck,
they're not
I can't
worse.
Stand me. Come on.
But there'd be 10 of them, and they'd be little. Well, just be. That's what happens. Like, it's right. There's not an option in this. It just.
And I can't. Like, I can't like kick them out of my house. They're like
you could. You can put them in a burlap sack and throw them in a river only, and you have to sit there and listen until the bubbles stop. So that's what you can do.
Okay. That sounds like a terrible situation.
I feel like the dividends might be worth it.
What misdeed has visited this awful scenario upon my home?
Like one of your ancestors was like 1/8 beholder or something.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So you
that would explain the shape of my head.
Yes. Like every once in a while, most of the time it's just normal nocturnal ejaculations.
Yep.
But every once in a while you actually procreate through that by dreaming up 10 little tiny coals.
Oh, that's awful. That's a terrible thing to say. What's the upside of having a bunch of little ewes?
Like you said, you train them to edit, you train them to to do things.
Yeah. Have my mom return that Roomba I'm getting for Christmas.
I would do if that happened is I would give one of them to my mom. She'd really like to have a little version of me to like still feel like a mother.
Oh God. My mom's been doing that a lot. She keeps talking about my younger relatives, like, oh, going to this choir concert. I wish I was still going to your choir concerts. I'm like, Mom, that's not how time works. You're just making me feel bad.
My mom's been doing that for like 20 years.
Oh,
like no joke. Like since I was a teenager, my mom did that.
Hmm.
And it is, it's been nonstop along with like weird pressure to have a baby.
Oh yeah, that's not weird. That's just mom's mama.
Well, but it's just been going on forever.
Yeah,
like it's just like it never stopped. And then like I'll have like a girlfriend or something. Like when I went back home and I visited my ex-wife because we're still friends and she has my cats and she had a baby. I wanted to meet her baby and stuff. My mom thought that was like step one in us getting back together so we could have another baby.
Oh no!
Like and it's very sad.
Yeah.
It's like mom, come on,
no.
You can't do this.
I'm just banking on my step. Sisters having more and more kids as long as we have at least one grandkid in the family that is under the age of 3 I'm
safe. Have one toddler at a time but giving my mom one of those little tiny like versions of me like what I think would do a lot like for her like because she would there's no way that version of me wouldn't get dressed up in like baby clothes and
you would set the precedent like you would buy him a little sailor suit.
Yeah,
I'm not talking about like a World War One like Doughboy suit. No, I'm talking about like a Sailor Moon kind of thing.
Here's a bearded toddler dressed up like an anime character, Mom.
He's yours
Merry
now.
Christmas. Yeah, this is your grandson of a sort.
Hi, like, hi.
Did you mean a nice? Did you,
this homunculus
nice
butted
girl?
Off of me.
Oh no! Oh no, mother! Oh no, mother!
God will only look at this creature sideways.
Yeah. Please put this handkerchief over your face when you drown it eventually.
Yeah. So it just regular rules apply. It's not like a gremlin thing. Occasionally when he screams, some nearby kid will get the croup. It's really weird.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Here's a painting that will also set aflame when he dies.
Yeah. Keep it away from the drapes.
Yeah, keep it somewhere safe.
Yep.
Yeah, that would be I can see the upside to it. I mean, mostly the upside. Because
the script a nightmare. I could see that might turn out okay.
Well, again, like I would never have to do anything I didn't want to do anymore if I could convince these little guys to do it.
But what if each of them is able to dream up a smaller version of themselves?
Oh man, that would be
wrong. Yeah, so you know, just, you shouldn't have said 10 because that's like logarithmic, you know?
Yeah, base 10. Especially if they could do that in turn, and eventually you would just have tons of like thimble sized.
Yeah, well, I mean, like you're thinking too big. I'm talking like dust mite size. It'd be like that one episode of Futurama is exactly what I'm describing.
You breathe them in.
Yep.
Like on accident. You know, the same way you like swallow 20 spiders a year or whatever. that would be pretty rough, I think. I think that one molting, I could probably find a use for 9 to 10.
Yeah.
They're just me and they're just sentient and they outnumber me too. So I'd be like, hey, edit this podcast. And they would be like, fuck you, grandpa. And like,
yeah, no, like they have a quorum. They can really vote you. Yeah. You have to treat them real well. That's the thing. No, I'm more in favor of all the skin and hair that I shed. Once that reaches up to the weight of a regular coal, it just like coalesces. Like it all goes somewhere.
Sure.
It turns into a beast, what looks like me. And then it sucks all the life out of me. And that's how, that's how more me's are made.
You're the coal of Theseus.
Yes.
it's like that X-Men mutant power in Grant Morrison's X-Men where all of his skin cells and stuff turn to like a version of him for a short time.
Yeah.
That like lives for like 2 hours. Like, it's just like
a short hellish existence.
That's rough. Yeah boy.
you mentioned last week that you were watching a show. I want to make sure while we still have energy and while we still have like 5 minutes left that I hear about this show.
I want you to, I mean, to give you, not give you an assignment, but mm-hmm. You should, if you ever get a chance and you're just looking for something low effort, mm-hmm. Watch a couple episodes of Good Eats.
Oh, Good Eats is great. Oh god, that's amazing.
Watch Good Eats.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
It's so, remember, I think I've said this before, but like, so Cutthroat Kitchen, very weird.
Yeah,
right. Like it's like, okay, like Alton Brown is this like cartoon Batman 60s villain, and like you know, it's like, oh, like what if you had to make a steak while like with a Red Ryder wagon on your head. I watch that and it's very weird, and then I watch Chopped,
right?
And
I'm like, similar vibe.
Chopped is weirder though, because it's like they make the contestant just demoralize themselves to an insane degree. Like there's no dignity left on Chopped. Like it's just like, you know, judges, I know I forgot an ingredient. I throw myself on your mercy. If I won the money, I would start a restaurant and save my father from being blind. And like, you know, like you just have to throw out.
I would buy my dad's eyes back.
Yeah, I would get my eyes back from the black market. From Jism Chow in the replicant market down in the
Shibuya. I mean, it might be kind of racist.
Jism Chow is he's back from the premium episode.
I know.
He's the guy who makes eyes from Blade Runner.
Yep,
in this version.
I know.
So like, you know, you had to really, and then I watched Good Eats, and Good Eats is even weirder because it's like a kid science show. Food.
Yeah, it's Mr. Wizard, but with a slightly portlier Alton Brown.
Yeah, with kind of, you know, but what I want to do is I want to start like a Bonfireside Chat lore podcast that just recaps
one Good episode Eats of each.
Yes, but no, not one of each. That'd be great. But even just Good Eats and just concentrated on the plot as opposed to ever mentioning the food.
Yeah.
Because if you break down what happens in those episodes to like a series of sentences, it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. He wanted to make pretzels, but then the lawyers told him that he couldn't say to use lie, but then he actually used lie. Like, what were the consequences of that?
Yeah, like Alton Brown is visited by two men in suits. They break into his house and hold up a sign that says "No Lion." Alton Brown grabs the camera and brings it into his pantry and whispers to it. Afterwards, he makes pretzels using lie. Or like, there's the openings to them. There's like one where he ran a plantation for blueberries,
mm-hmm.
and it was run entirely by kids.
Yeah,
it's like Alton Brown owns a plantation.
Yeah,
on this plantation he grows blueberries, and most of his labor is children. After talking to the nutritional anthropologist, he sends his children into the woods to get fresh blueberries. They're never seen from again. Yeah. Like that is a synopsis of an episode of Good Eats, and it's really, like, evocative without actually, you know, if you leave out the food part, the plots are really amazing.
Yeah. No, Good Eats is delightful. It's one of those shitty, like, I wish that there was a way to easily stream Food Network stuff. About 4 or 5 years back, there was a guy whose YouTube name was Like the Hat, and he just had like seasons and seasons of Good Eats on.
Oh, there's Good Eats on YouTube now. I watched the collection on Netflix. There's Good Eats collection number 3 on Netflix now.
But they do a shitty thing where they get rid of the old ones too. So you can watch a bunch of it, but you always want more.
Well, I mean, on YouTube, there's a bunch of old ones.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah. Like it was a guy who had collected them on that, but I'm not sure if it's still there, but it is still there.
That's what
awesome.
I'm saying.
Okay, cool. All
right. I'm saying that there is a, you can, if you just look up Good Eats full episodes, like you'll find them.
Nice.
And so I've been watching some early stuff because since I started with collection 3, but it is a very weird, like, just the plot of that show is one of the goofiest. Like, Brayden kept coming home when I was watching it, and it would be like Alton Brown like angrily arguing with a puppet that's supposed to represent yeast, and he's just like, what is this? Like, I know it's the weirdest fucking thing. Like, whenever I find a gluten strand, Alton Brown pulls out a big, you know, pool tube with foam dots tied to the end and flips it off and throws it into a garbage dispenser. It's like, this is like the weirdest fucking show. Like, it's low budget in a way that, like, I don't know, is very pure.
Yeah, like, he built a house specifically for it, like, in order to get the camera angles that he wants. Like, that entire kitchen is designed so he can do as much goofy stuff as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
what a fun life that guy's got.
Yeah, like, it's his production company that does it. Like, he owns the entire process.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love it. I think it's very cute.
Yeah.
Yeah, good boy. So here's a heartbreaking thing.
Uh-oh.
Something in the last episode, like, I was like, oh, there's a really good game fact for this.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's not in Warriors of the Eternal Sun. It's in Eye of the Beholder. It's not Eye of the Beholder. It is in Warriors of the Eternal Sun.
Well, okay, let's
so
do it.
We could have used it. I don't have it up anymore, and I'm not going to dig through it. But the thing, did you happen to find the guy who is like, the first paragraph of his game facts was him swearing off making game facts forever?
Yeah, I saw that.
Like, yeah, I was just like, that's very funny. He's like, forever I wanted to give back. I finally have. It should also be noted that I'll never do this again. Like, just like, you didn't, like, what is up with this, like,
yeah, nobody,
this long night of the soul?
Nobody held your feet to this particular fire.
Yeah, nobody gives a shit.
Yeah. Again, you know, is it yeoman's work or is it God's work?
I don't know.
Well, Gary,
anywho,
we did it.
We made it through double Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah.
Last week got a little rough. This week we're back.
Yep. Last week was fine. I think you're
last week. Yeah. I think I was like, I always get self-conscious about that.
Yeah.
Just because, I don't want people to like it. Yeah. It was fine. But now we're back and now we're off for the rest of the holidays.
Yeah, so, that's true. People are hearing this. Yes, thank you, Jala.
Yeah, really do appreciate it.
Yeah, I hope everybody had a good holiday season. While they're listening to this, it comes out on the 2nd. I hope that you were able, that you had fun and that you were safe.
Yes, please be safe. It is a dangerous holiday.
Yeah.
If you want to support the show, if you want to dictate a game, you can head on over to patreon.com/duckfeedtv. And $25 a month lets you dictate a game directly. You can always suggest a game, however. Mm-hmm. And any amount also allows you to participate in our raffles, or not raffles, polls.
The polls, yes.
Yep.
Those polls are made up of games that were suggested more than once. So if you think like, oh man, I really want them to play X, don't get like concerned that somebody might have already suggested it. Like, you putting that in actually makes it more likely that it comes up on one of those. So go for it. There's literally no downside to suggesting something.
Yeah, yeah. It is for the best. The you can also rate and review us on iTunes. That is very helpful. Tell friends about it, things like that. Mm-hmm. Those are all good things.
Yeah.
Other than that,
I think that's about it.
Thank you very much. Until next time, who is 11 dogs? Who is 10 smaller dogs?
Who is log dog? By which I mean, logarithmic dog.
Oh, okay. That's what log dog is.